Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Robert Jordan is working on the final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 25 of The Fourth Age. We will be dedicating this episode to fan feedback. Obviously, we can't always play or read all of the feedback that we get, but we thought that today we'd be able to catch up a bit on it. Also with me is Andrew.
Thanks, Carrie. Once again, I'm Andrew, and this is What You Should Know. As you may have noticed, Jason and Ben will not be joining us for this particular podcast. This is due to a malfunction in their call box Tarangreals, and since the gentlemen have not yet learned to travel efficiently as the rest of us, they will be taking a bit more time as they have taken Bella and Mandarb and decided to ride them to meet us at the next podcast. Also in the news, the Dragonmount Writers Guild has merged with the Illuminators organization here at Dragonmount, and we have taken on the Dragonmount Anthology. They are in the final stages of the anthology. They will not be able, obviously, to make the January 1st release date that was hoped for, but they say they have not forgotten about the project. It's just going to take them a bit longer to get it out and published. If you want more news about the Dragonmount Anthology, you can find it under the news articles a few months back on dragonmount.com. In other news, as many of you know, we like to keep up with Robert Jordan's blog, and just before the holidays, Mr. Jordan made a post that he titled The Very Best Christmas Present Ever. This is what RJ has to say. This is a very short post, I'm afraid. I know it's been a while since I posted last, but various things kept getting in the way. Still, here goes, with the best Christmas present I've ever received. Something I had to share without any delay. As you all no doubt know by now, the marker for amyloids is something called light lambda chains, which are found in the blood. The normal range is between 1 and 3. 5 months ago, I was at 75. 4 months ago, that had gone up to 96. The higher the LLC number, the worse for you, so I wasn't doing so hot. This morning, and of course that was on, I think, December 22nd, the Mayo Clinic gave me my most recent LLC number, 3.14. No, that isn't a typo, 3.14. I'm on the brink of normal, something I never thought I'd say about myself in any regard, frankly. I've got Liston on the ropes, guys, and I really believe that your prayers and well wishes have helped put me there. Now I just have to put him on the canvas. This isn't a cure, and I'm not ever sure whether it will count as remission, but it means I'm still on my feet and will have, and will be for a while yet. 3.14, hot damn. Merry Christmas and happy holidays, everyone. I'll talk to you again after the first, RJ. Well, and I mean, all I can say about that is, yeah, he says it best, hot damn. You know, he's down to pi lambda chains.
Yeah, that's definitely good news. I'm not surprised, though.
No, not at all.
Just because of his spirits and the way that he goes about with everything, it just seems like, it's not shocking. It's amazing news, and it's great. And I just, I think that he's going to go on living his life for a very long time, no matter whether he has this, even though he says may not be remission exactly and it's not cured, but I don't think it's going to get him down. So
yeah. And at least at this point it seems like it's gonna keep him at least in a better condition than he's been in the past couple of months, so maybe hopefully he'll start feeling a lot better.
Yeah, I would expect that probably. I don't know anything about the disease except for through Robert Jordan, but I would imagine that's what that would mean. So that's amazing news.
Welcome to Carrie's Fan Feedback of the Week.
This email is is from Josh Needleman. He is our very own music guru who provides our music for the Fourth Age podcast. His first question is, why didn't Nynaeve double bond Lan? He has a second question, which is, can Swan be fully healed from stilling if a man heals her the rest of the way like Loghain was fully healed by Nynaeve? And number three was Rand's beheading of a merchant woman and her guards on his way to the stone in the Dragon Reborn justified? Those are his three questions that he sent in to us. So we'll deal with number one first, which is, why didn't Nynaeve double bond Lan? What do you think, Andrew?
Okay. Why didn't he double? Well, it's an interesting question. My personal thought on it is that, first, I don't think Nynaeve knows it's possible. And second off, I kind of see Nynaeve as when she decides upon something, like when she finally decided to be Aes Sedai, she was going to do it exactly the way everyone thinks Aes Sedai should be. I think she's really concerned with the appearance of being Aes Sedai, and therefore to do something that is kind of considered not Aes Sedai-ish just doesn't work for her. So she has to kind of, you know, maintain herself in a very strict way, since she's trying to be as strictly adhering to the rules of Aes Sedai as possible. I mean, that's basically what I think. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. It could also be just something that, which that second one is simple, you know, well, both of them are, she doesn't know, and she wants to do it the way that she thinks a real, in brackets, Aes Sedai would do it. I also think it could have something to do with maybe she sees if she was to double bond, if she did know about, like, what Rand's women and him did. I know I shouldn't say Rand's women like that, but it's so much easier. I think that to her, it would almost be like sharing. And if she wants Lan's bond, it's going to be her and him and that's it. You know, kind of, that would be kind of like asking her to enter into their marriage. Like, no, their marriage is just the two of them. And so when she does get Lan's bond, it's just going to be the two of them. And
yeah, I totally,
you know, that's it.
Totally agree.
Which is kind of similar to what you said, but I think that it's kind of like a sharing thing too. She doesn't want to share. And then there's the, you know, if Suan was to be healed again by a man, since when a man heals, it seems to be that they're fully healed instead of partially, like how Nynaeve did with Suan and Lian. But so if she was healed by a man, could she be fully healed? It would be like double healing. I don't know. I don't know if that even is possible. But I think that maybe in the two healing, they're like between man and woman, the way that they, the Ashaman and the Aes Sedai heal, there's something different. So maybe the man can find whatever that is to boost her back to her original strength. It's definitely worth trying.
Yeah, I've kind of wondered about this one too myself, and I think a lot of listeners probably have. What I thought of originally, when I first read that Nynaeve was able to heal Loghain and Flynn was able to heal the stilled Aes Sedai, what I originally thought of was the concept of a cast, because when they were cleansing Sidon of the taint, it was the idea that Sidar kind of just flowed around Sidon, so that it wasn't exactly, and so it kind of thought to me, or I thought, you know, what might happen is, like, it's like taking two ends of a broken bone and putting a cast around it, so that basically it holds it together long enough for the connection to heal. So I think it's possible that maybe, you know, if a man were to heal someone, that she might just heal the rest of the way. The only other way I could see is that maybe they'd have to re-still her in order to fully heal her back to the completely complete way. But I don't know.
But then would she be fully healed back to what she is now? Or would it be considered what she was originally?
Might be possible.
If she was stilled again and Nynaeve did it again, would she be even lesser as she was now? Or would she be the same?
I guess that kind of depends on whether or not it gets cut in the same place, or whether it gets, or whether it's like each time you are severed from the source, you're severed at a different area. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess Robert Jordan could tell us, but I don't think anyone else possibly could. And
yeah,
I guess anyone's theory on that one's is
fun to speculate about. Maybe we'll find out something about that in A Memory of Light.
Possible.
Would be very interesting.
So then the last one was, the question was Rand's beheading of the merchant woman and her guards on his way to the Stone of Tyr justified? Justified. I'm not exactly sure what to say about that one. I very much do believe that he wasn't crazy. I do think he figured out she was Dark Friend. Whether or not him just outright killing them all was justified, I don't know. I think he very much was fearing for his life and just decided, you know, well, I'm going to strike out at whatever comes near me. I mean, I think he uses either fire or balefire on somebody's dogs at some point in time during I think the same chapter. I don't think he was completely altogether in the here and now and what's actually going on, but I don't know. I would hesitate to use the word justified, but I think he at least has an excuse.
Yeah, he has an excuse, but anybody, I mean, except for insane psychos and serial, you know, I mean, everybody can come up with an excuse, but justified's a hard word. I mean, and, you know, if we were here in this world, obviously he would not be, but he's there, and everybody seems to just kill when they... trying to think of consequences, like, you know, and what consequences there are for killing, even if it's in self-defense, you know, which I mean, I don't believe he was wrong, but justified, is he just? Is,
yeah,
who is he to say? I don't, that's a really, really hard question.
The only thing that, and I understand what brings up the word justified, this nameless woman that we've met, that we only met once and very briefly, she has a spot on Rand's list in his head, that horrible, horrible list that he runs through every single time a woman dies anywhere within 10 miles of him. You know, suddenly an entire, you know, list of name comes up, and this woman's on it. We hear about her for books and books later, you know, about a nameless woman with her head on the ground. And it's like, obviously for Rand, killing her impacts him in a very hard way. I think in the same way that when Matt had, I think it's odd. I don't know, to be quite honest.
Well, it does so much that after that, he never kills another woman.
Yeah.
I mean, they die in other ways that he seems to think of as his fault, you know, but he can't kill Lanfear, you know, or any of the female Forsaken, because he can't kill a woman. So I think in his mind he's not justified. He was not justified.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think it does.
Okay. Well, we're just gonna go on. And we have a voicemail sent in from Eric. So thanks to Eric for sending this in.
Hi, this is Eric in Turkey. I just wanted to call and maybe leave a little theory for you. I keep hearing you talk about Rand dying, and one of the things that it says is that he'll die and live again, whole nine yards. Did you ever think that possibly it could be that the person that helps Rand die and live again, Alanna, I believe it is going to actually help Rand kill Luz Theron? And because they seem to be the same person, or becoming the same person, two people in one body. And the way for him to die and live again would be to kill Luz. Well, anyways, have a nice day. Bye.
Right, that's actually a good theory. It's actually Olivia. But what do you think about that, Andrew?
Well, I understand it, and I honestly, we've heard a lot of variations, I think, from a number of people about what Olivia's role will actually be is to actually kill Luz Thurin as opposed to Rand. The one thing that I've always kind of wondered is, how do you kill Luz Thurin without killing the actual physical Rand? You know, how does Rand actually survive? And I think there was somebody at one point who had written us and said, well, maybe she'll use the one power and use lightning like a defibrillator, you know, where they clear and like the physical body will be dead because Luz Thurin will have been killed in Rand's body, and they'll like restart Rand's heart, and Rand's spirit will be like, hey, I get to come back into control now. I don't know. I don't know. I do think that in order for Rand to survive, Luz Thurin does have to bite the dust.
I think that too. And maybe there's so many different ways you could take it, how she's going to help him to die. But it could be something like that where she does actually help Rand to die so in turn they can kill Luz Thurin. I don't think that it's just going to be Luz Thurin to die without Rand looking like he's died or died in some way, because Min's viewings are usually pretty accurate. She might see something like something inside him die or another part of him die, or I don't think it would be that, you know, Olivia will actually help him to die. I don't know, because not that her viewings, once she knows what it is, she knows.
That's true.
You know, she kind of knows what it is, like Egwene's dreams. So some of them, you know, she has to puzzle out, and she doesn't understand what it is, but at the same time, she knows that it's going to be helping him to die. Unless she's helping him to die to kill Luz Thurin, because maybe that's the only way.
You know, mentioning that, and I was just thinking, one of Min's earlier viewings of Rand is the one where he's talking about, you know, where he gets the proof that Luz Thurin's a real voice in his head. What she says there, if I remember correctly, is something about, you know, there's you and then there's another person, and the two of you kind of merge together and one of you dies. I'm pretty sure she actually says one of you dies. And I don't know which one survives or something to that effect. She kind of implies it. So, I mean, it very well could be that, you know, we're heading for a big, you know, melding together Luz Thurin and Rand, and whichever of them bites it, the other one is the one that survives. And Olivia just might play into that.
Somehow, yeah. Yeah, when you put it with this theory, it kind of makes sense. I always took Min's other viewing. I always thought Rand was wrong and that it wasn't talking about Luz Thurin. I always thought that it was speaking more of Morden, like Ishi. But it works well with this theory, so.
Definitely a good one.
We also have another voicemail from Storm.
Hello, my name is Storm Hughes, and I would like to say I love the podcast. It's awesome. I love what y'all are doing. And I've noticed on just about every episode that talks about Elaine, I hear all these theories and comments about the Forsaken finding her. Well, I'd like to kind of put out about that Tarangriel that Avienda gave her, that's supposed to keep, that everyone seems to keep forgetting about, the one that she said keeps her from being seen or whatever by the Dark Friends. So I wanted to know if anyone has any theories about that one, because I keep noticing that people don't talk about that one. And then I hear stuff about Tuan. No one, everyone keeps saying she doesn't channel. I keep hearing that. Well, I remember reading, I think I remember, about one of the later books, about her and Mac were in the wagon. Well, she tries, you read about her doing something, and her eyes go wide with shock, and she asks Mac, how did she do that? And he feels the fox head medallion go cold. So she obviously can channel, because if she had, you know, tried anything else that does not require channeling, she wouldn't have asked him that, you know? So I was just curious about that. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Storm. Those are two good points.
Yeah, about the dagger. I actually went into Knife of Dreams and found the point where it talks about that. Basically, what it says, Elena's speaking to Avienda. They're getting dressed after, I can't remember, something happened. And Elaine has noticed that Avienda is holding on to the dagger. The dagger it's a Tarangriel, and it's a small, basically, it's got a blade about the length of someone's hand, and it's a dull blade, and its hilt is deer horn that's been wrapped in, like, a gold wire. And Avienda says, I thought to give it to you, but you never said anything about it, so I thought I might be wrong, and then we would believe you were safe, from some dangers at least, when you were not. Later on, Elaine asks her, you know, right about what? What are you talking about? This, Avienda said, holding up the dagger, I think that if you have this in your possession, the shadow cannot see you, not the eyeless or the shadow twisted, maybe not even leaf blighter. Except that I must be wrong if you did not see it. And then that sparks Elaine to realize that Avienda can read Tarangriel and find out what they do. Basically, what that kind of says is that the dagger that Avienda does give Elaine will keep Murdrol and Trollocs and maybe other types of shadow spawn and maybe even the Dark One himself from seeing Elaine. I'm not sure that actually extends to Dark Friends or Black Aja. It might not. But that's where that kind of comes in.
Yeah, I don't think it really... I mean, it very well could. Even the Forsaken, I don't think that it applies to them either. There is a possibility that it could, but chances are, if this is going on the assumption that, you know, just there's been some theories thrown out that, you know, very possibly Elaine could be kidnapped, blah, 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 because we've had different theories like that. And probably it would be one of the Forsaken or some Black Aja, someone like that. And I don't think the dagger would do too much good against protecting her, and they would probably take any of her weapons away from her. Plus, you also have how many times does Elaine do things where, you know, you're not thinking and she's not thinking she's in any danger, and she might not have the dagger with her for some reason. So I don't think that is any reason to keep her safe. She's also supposed to be... She thinks she's going to be safe until her children are born. But because they're born healthy and everything's fine, so she assumes that she's okay, but not sure I really buy that. But
Yeah,
so I don't know how much protection it actually offers. It would. I mean, if she was running from a, you know, a Trolloc or something, then sure, that would be great. It's definitely a nifty thing to have, but it doesn't protect her basically from any wrongs happening to her. So, yeah,
well, and how many times have we seen Elaine get kidnapped in these books?
Yeah,
I mean, let's face it, she takes unnecessary risks, and mm-hmm. I think that's ultimately where our theory about one of the Forsaken capturing her comes from, is the idea that she takes so many risks, and we know she's going to be at the last battle, even though currently she's pregnant. You know, it's the idea that the dagger might help in some ways, because things that would just outright kill her, like, you know, the Trollocs and the Murdrol, wouldn't even be able to know she was there. But I'm thinking regular humans, they'd have to be pretty far gone. Like, maybe Greyman couldn't see her, which would be weird because people don't usually see Greyman. But
yeah.
You know, definitely an interesting thing.
Well, that's one thing right there is Elaine was kidnapped and bound in honor of, you know, either A, she didn't have the, I can't remember specifically, but she either didn't have the dagger on her then when they went to, when she went to where the Black Aja were staying, or she had the dagger on her, but it didn't matter because it doesn't work against Black Aja, you know, just Dark Friends itself, themselves. Right? Because that would have been afterwards, after she got the dagger.
Yeah, it was afterwards, but I don't really, I don't remember if she had the dagger with her or not. I suppose I should have looked that up, too.
I don't either, but I just thought about it, but either she didn't or it didn't work, so either way, it's showing that just because she has it doesn't mean that it's always going to protect her.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so...
Okay, so the second part of that, then, was Tuan possibly channeling in the wagon. If I remember correctly, and I couldn't find where exactly that was, at the time that it happened, where Matt got channeled at in her presence, she had taken the Adam that were used to get the Aes Sedai out of out of Abu Dhar, and she had actually fastened it on Jolene, I think, the one Aes Sedai who hadn't been captured in Abu Dhar, and she was teaching her a lesson, and Matt tried to go up and do something, I don't remember what it was, and I'm pretty sure Tuan uses Jolene to try to use the power on him just to hold him, and the flows, of course, melted because of the Foxhead Tarangriel, and she, I'm trying to remember exactly how it went, and she noticed that the flows melted, which, if she's connected to the Adam and connected to the Aes Sedai who's channeling, then obviously she'd know that the weaves didn't work properly.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big thing that we've pretty much talked about when talking with Tuan and whether or not she can channel is that she acknowledges that she could learn to channel, but that she hasn't and she won't learn to channel. And that's what separates her from women who can channel naturally.
Yeah, she says it's her choice. She chooses not to. Yeah. That's I think those were her words, is she chooses not to learn. So, and it's stated after working, you know, after time working with the Adam that you get to see and have like a sense of what the flows are actually doing, and that's where Egwene started to get the notion of that they can actually see them, but they don't realize the flows. They don't realize it, you know, what's going on. So I don't, you know, it wasn't actually her channeling. It was, but she can channel if she chose to, but she chooses not to learn. So she doesn't, as far as we know, unless that theory, about where was it in when they were outside the hell, and
yeah.
We don't know what Tom saw or not, that whole thing, it very well could be that maybe she did channel, but she can, she's capable of it, but I don't think at that specific time she was actually channeling. She was just, she knew what was going on because she was attached to the Adam.
Yeah, I think so. And who knows? RJ may surprise us and we may get, you know, Tuan showing up at the last battle and flinging stuff all over the place, you know, on her own. And
I would love to see the look on Matt's face.
Oh, his jaw would hit the ground.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun. Okay, so we have another voicemail from Josh.
Hello, my name is Josh Waller. I just started listening to your podcast not too long ago. I listened to the Audible book, All in the Knife of Dreams, and I had a question, I don't know if it was explained in that one or not, about the gardeners, the Ogier from the Shanshan. Do they have the same longing to go to the settings, or do they, how did they overcome that? You guys ever thought about that? I'd like to hear your input. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Josh. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Andrew and I did a little bit of research on that to try and see if we could find any actual evidence to support it one way or the other, but we couldn't find anything concrete, so we just kind of have thoughts on that, but nothing conclusive.
Yeah, the Big White Book has a section both on Shanshan and the Ogier, and in the Ogier section, the longing is explained in great detail, just not about the Ogier and Shanshan. And in the Shanshan section, the only mention of the Ogier is the gardeners and how that they're the only members of the Death Watch Guard who aren't property. And that's basically all that's said in the Big White Book about it. I know my personal thought on it was that the longing for Ogier on Rand's side of the ocean is based on the Ogier who were trying to find the Steading when the world broke, and they developed this longing for the beauty and the peace that the Steading creates, and they eventually refound them, and when they refound the Steading, they were kind of bound to the Steading because the longing had been imprinted into their souls, essentially. And the Ogier over in Shanshan may have never found the Steading, and in order to survive, they had to grow harder and colder, and therefore they became like the gardeners, who, you know, are just perfect for the Death Watch Guard because they're all about duty and purpose and whatnot, and they're not about beauty and art like the Ogier on Rand's side of the ocean seem to be.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, because I think that's maybe one of the other things that it really said. I think it was in the Big White Book where it said that basically you wouldn't know them, like from what we know of Ogier over on Randland, you wouldn't know them for being the same because they're so fierce. They're fierce warriors, and which Ogier are as well, but these guys are feared, you know, and they're kind of scary. And, you know, of course, if you were to tick off Loyal, I'm sure at one point you might be able to push him, but these guys, you know, they do it out of defense, and whoever it is that they're set to be watching and defending.
Oh yeah,
but
I
you
am
know,
pretty...
actually, the only thing that doesn't make sense is they would have eventually found a Steading, not over there, but were they over there before the Shanshan got there? Before they got
I'm
there,
I'm assuming that the Ogier...
they must have been either that or if they went with them. I can't remember if it says or not. Then they would have found a Steading at one point. And then when, after Ardor Hawkwings, you know, sent his son over to Shanshan, I mean, that was after the breaking of the world. So I kind of always thought that the Ogier went with them. So they would have found a Steading if they were mainly over here. So the only way they wouldn't have is if they were over there
Native.
During the breaking.
Yeah.
Like, and then they were stuck over there or something, and then, which could be possible. I'm not really too sure. Even still, they think they die maybe because of their hardening. It didn't matter that they found the Steading, that they still, you know, never went through that longing because they got hard and got over it. They didn't long to see the beauty, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely possible. I hadn't really considered that. I guess I kind of always assumed that the gardeners were kind of native to Shanshan, that they were the Ogier who were separated from the rest of them when the world kind of broke apart. And maybe that's not how things actually were.
Because maybe they never had... If they were native to there, it could be possible if they were there, that somewhere over there could be a Steading.
True.
Unless there's things that we just don't remember from the books about them. But nothing we could find anyway. Sorry we couldn't help you anymore, but...
Yeah definitely some interesting things to think about.
Maybe somebody, if anybody has any comments or theories of your own about any of this, just send them in to us, because we'd like to hear from you.
Yeah. And I know this one's been a short one, but I think that's pretty much going to wrap things up for right now. In the next podcast, we'll be discussing, you know, our favorite wolf brother, Perrin. Even though, if I remember correctly, some of us have mixed feelings toward the big lug. Feel free, of course, guys, to send us any theories, comments, or feedback to our forums on dragonmount.com/forums. Our particular forum is under the Fourth Age tab, obviously.
And don't forget to send us a voicemail at 1-888-333-7690. Also, you can email us at podcast@dragonmount.com. And don't forget to visit our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/fourthage. Take care, everybody.
Blessed be you all in the light, and for Ben and Jason, who can't be with us this time, walk in the light.
Hey guys, I just wanted to say thank you for the work you guys have been doing. It's great every once in a while to just log on to iTunes and see there's another Fourth Age podcast waiting for me. I enjoy listening to you guys every time you come out with an episode. It's fun. I'm a big fan of the books. It's just fun to find someone else out there who likes books as much as I do. Thank you, guys. Keep it up.
The Fourth Age podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. The Fourth Age music is brought to us by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.